Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We begin this Monday with our conversation with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Welcome. Good to talk to you again.
Good morning, Carrie.
Ken, as you know, there were a lot of dramatic declarations in this fight over Kavanaugh, that this was the end of true bipartisanship in the Senate and things would be different forever after. There was a before and after. Do you think there is something to that?
Well, yeah, yes and no. And the reason I say that is because I don't know if there was, we talk about the end of bipartisanship. I mean, we could say that the end of bipartisanship came with the Bork hearings, with Clarence Thomas, with Bush versus Gore. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that the two parties were very friendly coming into this. But this was, every time we go through some crisis like this, it seems to get worse and worse. And this really not only tore apart the country, it tore the Senate in half. And I would suspect that, given the fact that most senators knew how they were voting even before there was an announced nominee for the court, you know that partisanship is taking over.
I see that Senator Susan Collins is saying, when she was asked by reporters in Maine over the weekend, that she has had many people call her and thank her for her vote. If Democrats were under any lingering illusion that Susan Collins was ever going to support their core causes, that seemed to end with her vote for Kavanaugh, didn't it?
Not only did it seem to end, but it seemed to end the pretense of her saying that she was really torn by this nomination. When I heard Lisa Murkowski, the one Republican who voted no, when I heard her comments, she seemed very anguished and torn and talked about what was happening to the Senate. When I listened, and I listened to Susan Collins' entire 44-minute speech on the Senate floor, it sounds like her mind was made up a long time ago.
It did,
she said,
didn't
yes,
it?
I believe Christine Blasey Ford, but I just think she was mistaken. I mean, that's kind of a backhanded compliment there somewhere. But when I listened to everything she said, she basically laid out the argument for Kavanaugh's confirmation. Did not sound like she was conflicted whatsoever.
Brett Kavanaugh wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal before the vote, but I think it applies to now what we'll see about how he behaves on the court. I am an independent, impartial judge. I mean, it is obvious that even he knows that he played some role in the damage to the reputation of the court, no matter what kind of responsibility he does or doesn't accept in this alleged sexual assault. Some of what he said in the hearings, it sounds like he now wishes he hadn't said it.
Well, I don't know if he wishes he hadn't said it or not, but when he said that this is a battle led by the left-wingers, by the Clintons, by those unhappy with the 2016 election, that did not sound independent. That did not sound impartial. That sounded like a very political statement for a member, for a soon-to-be member of the Supreme Court that always prides itself on being above politics. So I think what the conservatives' greatest hope was and what the liberals' greatest fear was came to fruition with that confirmation vote, because he sounded very partisan, very political. And again, everybody's going to be watching. Matter of fact, this vote, while it was officially over 50-48, doesn't mean the fight is still over, because believe it or not, they're still talking about some opponents on the left are still talking about impeachment. They're still talking about getting those documents that were hidden from them during Kavanaugh's time in the Bush administration. The battle is not over, even though the vote is certainly over.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this, Ken, that if Democrats take the House back, there is talk that there will be further investigations into the documents that were withheld and, you know, other witnesses that were willing to be interviewed and never were by the FBI on these sexual assault allegations. I mean, talk about a not ending. This could go on for another couple of years if the Democrats take the House.
And Republicans are making that an issue in the 29 days to go before the election. They're saying that if the sore loser Democrats take over after November 6th, well, we're going to have more and more investigation, more and more subpoenas, and even talk about an impeachment. And of course, you all remember the last time Supreme Court justice was impeached and removed from office. That was never. So the Republicans are trying to excite their base the way that Democrats have been excited for perhaps nearly 2 years, given the starting with the Women's March the day after Trump's inauguration. But conservatives are getting very excited and energized by this Kavanaugh debate as well. We're seeing more and more crowds coming out for Republican candidates. We're finding more and more Democratic senators, like Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, among others, on the defensive. So what looked like was going to be a good political advantage for the Democrats, now I wonder what's going to happen in the less than 1 month to go before the election.
Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us, as he always is, on Monday mornings. And we're talking to him about the Kavanaugh vote over the weekend and some of the politics that surround the upcoming midterms about a month away. President Trump, Ken, has been telling voters to pretend that he's on the ballot, you know, in the midterms, and he's saying this in places like Alabama and Kentucky, where he remains pretty popular. I would think there are some states who went for Trump 2 years ago, but where that is now somewhat of a risky proposition, where you've got maybe a large number of independent voters who do not see him as popular anymore. What do you think?
Well, that's definitely true. But the fact remains that he was always on the ballot. A first-term president is always on the ballot, just as Barack Obama was in 2010, just as Bill Clinton was in 1994. A lot of this, of course, is a referendum on the president and his first 2 years in office. And so that's true. But the fact is that while Trump remains wildly popular with Republicans and among the most popular Republican presidents of all time within his own Republican Party, more and more independents are shying away from him. I think for a lot of independents who said, well, you know, I'm not crazy about Donald Trump, but I don't want Hillary Clinton, so I'll vote for Donald Trump in 2016. Those independents seem to be drifting away from the Republican Party towards the Democrats. And that's what, of course, what the Democrats' hopes are of winning the House. And it's ironic when you're looking at the tea leaves in advance of November 6th, we're seeing some signs that the Democrats are doing really well in House races because of everything that's gone on in the past 2 years and the Kavanaugh battle. Mm-hmm. But Republicans seem to be picking up some momentum in this battle for the Senate in states like Indiana and West Virginia and Montana and Missouri and Florida because of the Kavanaugh hearing. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, we always talk about what's going to happen in Minnesota with those four congressional seats where Democrats could pick up two and Republicans
could
pick up
two. Got the double flip here, as I like to call it, Ken. Yeah.
Isn't that something, right? So basically, that could be a microcosm of what's going on in the country.
I just want to follow up on what you said about when you look at polling and you look at independents and then you look at Trump's popularity among his core Republican base. I mean, does that just tell you about the kind of polarization that we see? What are these independents who said, as you've suggested, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton, roll the dice on Trump? And what is it that they're seeing about Trump that in some ways is giving them buyer's remorse, given the fact that Republicans are so enthusiastic about him?
For the most part, what independents have seen in the past 2 years, is not bad policy-wise. Look, he promised a conservative Supreme Court. He's given us a Supreme Court. He's promised a new attention to foreign policy, a more pro-American foreign policy when it comes to relationships and tariffs and trade and things like that. He's delivered. The stock market is booming. Unemployment is at a record low. So on paper, this could be a great argument for two more years of Republican leadership and Republican gains. But it's the personal stuff, the silly stuff, the pointless stuff, the meanness, the intemperate tweeting, the personal attacks. That's what drives the independents nuts. And so I think if there are going to be Democratic gains on November 6th, a lot of it will be led by these independents who've just said 2 years of what we've seen so far is enough.
Ken, I'm curious about what you take from some of these signs that are coming out of the Mueller team that some of the lawyers are leaving. I mean, he still has a pretty big team of lawyers, but a few of them have left. Any indication that you're picking up that this might be coming to a conclusion?
I've said from the beginning that Robert Mueller is not looking at a calendar. He is not looking at when the day of the midterms are. But unlike what James Comey did 11 days before the election in 2016, I don't see Mueller. I think Mueller is trying the best he can to avoid any kind of taint of politics. I don't think he would drop a bombshell in the remaining days before November 6th.
Oh, yeah.
But I suspect that, as you say, that given the fact that he's gotten many guilty pleas, that he's gotten many indictments, he may have a case to go forward. I just don't think it's going to happen before November 6th.
Ken, since we've been talking about 2016 here for a minute, I have to recommend an interview. I heard it in podcast. It was Fresh Air with the author of the new book about Facebook and democracy. And the reason I think you'd find this interview really interesting is halfway through the interview, they get into the details of how Facebook went to the presidential campaigns and said, we've got these tools, we've got this data, we've got this information, we're willing to share that with you, hire us and bring us in. The Clinton campaign said, no, we have a big digital operation and data operation. We don't really need that. Trump's team, of course, was kind of like a shoestring and needed all the help it could get infrastructure wise. And they brought Facebook in. And apparently one of the lead architects of the Trump win says we couldn't have done it without Facebook. It was fascinating about the sophistication of the targeting that Facebook could do and how beneficial that was to the Trump campaign. So I want to recommend that to you.
That sounds like an amazing read. I am going to absolutely look forward to that. And that once again shows that the Hillary Clinton campaign, for the most part, knew that it had the victory in the bag. From all indications, they were doing very fine. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm not going to go to Wisconsin. I'm not going to Michigan. That's okay. We have those states won. And it just also shows that the lack of organization, the lack of structure in the Trump organization would be glad to take any kind of help it got. And you're absolutely right. From what I've read about everything about what Facebook was offering, there was just an amazing amount of documentation and facts and figures that would help any kind of campaign. It's one more reason, it seems, why the results in 2016, at least in the Electoral College, turned out the way they did.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.